This podcast is brought to you by DKP & Co. Chartered Accountants. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
Wow. Last week, they copped six. Today, they've copped five. But for one little period of the game, Michael Lynch joins us from The Age. Michael, I thought they were going to upset Adelaide and put the cat amongst the pigeons come the finals time.
Well, they might have done. I can't really say, mate, because I've been out and I didn't see the game. So I'll be absolutely honest with you. It's actually a day off for me.
Mate, I don't expect anything but your honesty.
I had a few things to do, so watching Adelaide and Brisbane wasn't really top priority. I can catch up with it on the highlights or the replay, I'm sure.
Actually, you will. And let me tell you, as when it comes to highlights, there were eight goals.
So, well, that's pretty good, isn't it? That's what we like.
Entertainment-wise, off the charts.
That's more than in most of those AFLW women's games, isn't it?
I'm not going there. I'm staying right out of that conversation, Michael.
Well, that's you.
I think what was evident from that game is the fact that Brisbane Roar aren't fit enough, and the curtains have closed on their season now. That's done and dusted, and it's going to be interesting to see what the newly appointed head coach, Robbie Fowler, will do next season.
Hey, there you go. What do you make of that appointment, Michael?
Well, if they're not fit enough now, they're never going to be, are they? I mean, let's be honest. How can you not be fit in this league? You've got the world's longest off-season. It always baffles me. Why aren't players totally injury-free, hyper-fit and buzzing to go at the start of each season? And they only play once a week. It's not as if it's taxing. So, and I'm always amazed at how many players are missing at the start of each season with so-called injuries or long-term injuries. I don't know what's going on in this country, but...
Maybe we don't play enough football. Maybe we just don't play enough games.
I think that's it, actually. People's bodies are maybe not tough enough. They don't do enough work, perhaps.
Too much sports science.
that's been said before. Oh. You know, you're not the first bloke to actually say that. Although, interestingly, people say that the best sports medicine is in this country and that people love to come here and do their rehab and you know, do their recovery from injury. And I know that, you know, Harry Kuehl, when he was in his pomp, you know, was so impressed with Australian physiotherapist Les Gellis that he used to employ Les in the UK. He used to basically pay him a wage to live in Britain to look after him, you know?
Look, I don't doubt that we have some fantastic people, and proof in the pudding is that we have an array of our best physios playing for organisations as big as Manchester United, Chelsea, Arsenal, Tottenham, whatever. So they're there, and they're known.
Physios are not sports science, is it?
No. Well, most of the when I say physios, I'm talking about some of their sports science people who are more than just physio.
I think you need to make the distinction because a physiotherapist is a medical or quasi medical practitioner. A sports scientist may or may not have a physiotherapy qualification. But there's no need, maybe, that they might not have that. They might have another scientific or sport and fitness one. It's not an area I'm totally au fait with, but I have heard it said by many that sports scientists do rule the roost in terms of organising training schedules. And it was put to me that had David Beckham been born and brought up in Australia in the last 7 or 8 years, he would never have become a free kick expert because he wouldn't have been allowed to stay behind after training and practice for half an hour or 45 minutes on his own and do all that sort of stuff. So there's probably pros and cons. Brisbane fit enough or not fit? I don't know. But let's hope there's no excuse, surely, in this country. The climate, particularly up there, is fantastic. You can live outside virtually all year round.
Well, that's it. And we saw in that last game that Brisbane Roar, around the 60th and 70th minute mark, they just defended so deep. And it's happened.
Inviting the attack to come through.
I saw them do that. Last in Adelaide, week. Actually, early this year, they were 3-1 up, playing against 3-0 up, playing against 10 men, and they started to defend on the edge of their box. They ended up having 2 sent off. It finished 9-10, and Adelaide won 4-3.
You were talking about sports science. This is Michael Lynch joining us on FNR. Louise Taffer, George Tanikian in the studio. And, you know, some of the questions that have been posed in the past is that maybe we need to get back to some of the ways that they were playing football in the past. I was watching a fantastic feature. It's a movie, actually, on Netflix called Pelé. It's the story of Pelé. And in his early days at Santos, he would spend many an hour, well and truly, in the dark, you know, kicking and testing his prowess and his sharpshooting. And everyone was amazed about what he turned into, but he didn't do it without putting the hours in before. So here we are yet again, another great of the game, you know, on a journey that proved that the only way to get to the very top was by, you know, continually getting better at it and working at it.
I would love to add something to that, George.
Go.
Isn't that the case? And we talk about the 10,000-hour rule.
Yeah.
To get proficiency in a particular function, often a motor function, which is essentially what most football is.
Yeah.
And practice makes perfect is a cliche or an old saying that is very much part of the lexicon.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just, there's sort of a kind of mindset that's grown up, particularly through the education system over the last 30 or 40 years, you know, about repetition is evil and it's not creative and, you know, you don't have to learn things by rote. Well, do you know what? You do sometimes, because if you do things by rote, and whether that's learning your times table or learning to conjugate your Italian, Greek, French, Latin verbs or whatever, it means you can do it without thinking and when you need to.
It makes you more instinctive as a footballer.
Yeah, and football and track and field, I imagine, if you're a hurdler doing the 400 or 110 hurdles, you have to incessantly practice your stride pattern, your lift, your jump, your get away from the hurdle so that you can seamlessly take it in your stride. And you know, football, I don't think, is any different. I mean, you know, kids, if you want to go out there and just kick a ball against the wall for 2 hours and play keepy-uppy, go and do it.
Look, there's a guy called Borg who is considered one of the greatest tennis players, you know, to play the game, and he would sit there for hours upon hours upon hours hitting the ball against a garage that, you know, was outside his home. So it's proof. You've got to work at it.
Oh, and I was about to say that Cristiano Ronaldo won his first ever UEFA Champions League title with Manchester United in 2008. And do you know what he did after he won it?
He went out and practiced.
He was out back on the pitch training in the dark.
Yeah.
And
commitment
even looking and a little bit more locally, when Daniel Arzani and Danny Jonro were at Melbourne City, they would constantly stay back after training, practicing free kicks. And I said to Denny one day, how are you so good? Is that all you do? And he said, yes, that's
just
literally
practice.
All I do.
There you go, Michael. More evidence yet again.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're talking about in a narrow football sense. You can argue that for the holistic development of an individual, doing other things is actually worthwhile. But if we're just talking about football and becoming a master at football, yeah, you probably just do need to practice more. And look at him and Johnny Wilkinson. You know, what
Correct.
A brilliant
Correct.
English fly half. Johnny Wilkinson would go out on Christmas Day on his own and practice taking drop kicks, conversions, kicking from distance. And didn't it pay off? 20 seconds from the end of the Rugby World Cup final, he gets an opportunity to snap a drop goal. He puts it over. England beat Australia and become world champions. He did it without thinking.
Exactly right. And if there was anyone who had a more mechanical style or technique, I want to see it, because whenever I saw him kick, I thought, here it goes. You could see every step. It was not any longer counting those steps. They had been built into his technique, and that was it. 5 steps forward, 1 step to the right, then kick through the ball. And he did it like a clock.
Yeah, it's the same. You watch tennis players, serving in Grand Slam tournaments.
Correct.
Watch Rafa Nadal. He's got some kind of, you know, ritual he goes through, bouncing the ball, and that would have been born of decades, in his case, of practice serving, same as Andy Murray, Joker, the Fed Express, Roger Federer.
Yeah.
They all have, and it's because of the constant practice. Anyway, that's enough for practice, don't you think?
Last round of the A-League has come up. We've already seen the opening game for the Anzac Day commemorations. What do you expect over the weekend?
I expect Melbourne City to beat Central Coast, Victory to thump West Sydney, Perth to probably draw or beat Wellington, and I expect the status quo on the league table to be pretty much maintained. If Perth do beat Wellington, I think it will be a fairly narrow win. I don't think City can win by more than two against the Mariners. I think City prefer to finish sixth anyway, despite what Warren Joyce might say. I think Scott Jamieson said yesterday all the players want to finish sixth and play Victory. So, you know, they want to win tomorrow, play well, still finish sixth, go in with some momentum and take on Victory. So I think we'll see wins for Victory, wins for City, wins for Perth, and the top six pretty much as it is.
Michael, one of the things that we need to just pose for a moment, and I'm just wondering, when is your next article coming out in The Age?
Well, there'll be one in tomorrow's paper. It should be up
online
now.
What are you covering?
Well, Warren Joyce talking about who's going to play tomorrow and who's not. He's going to leave out Delatt and Harrison Delbridge because they're one booking away from a suspension which would rule them out of the final against Victory.
Yeah, and he can't afford
Jamieson,
that.
Jamieson comes back in with Schenkenveld, and Backus may re-enter the picture because Griffiths is out with a hamstring. So all that will be in the story tomorrow, but it's probably up online now already.
By the way, some interesting goings on across the Tasman. We now know for sure that Mark Rudin is leaving Wellington. Possibly, as you touched on last week. Yes, we did. But have we heard any more? Has anything more been said in the background? I know your network is pretty extensive. Are you any closer to telling us where he's likely to finish up?
Well, yeah, everyone knows that it's almost certain, isn't it, that he'll go to Western United.
And I didn't ask about almost certain. I'm waiting for you to just...
Western United. I'll be flabbergasted if he doesn't end up at Western United.
Well, let me tell you, we'll be ringing you first up and go, Michael, what happened?
Your flabber is garsted, you'll be ringing me. But, I'd be amazed if he didn't end up there. And, you know, look, I like Mark Rudin and I like him a lot, but, you know, all this... it breaks my heart to leave. Well, don't leave, mate. You've got a one-year contract left. He could have stayed.
That's exactly what Louise has been saying. Stay, mate.
And you know, if the club had sacked him, like, he would have been getting compensation. Does he pay them compensation?
Ooh.
I don't know. You know, I mean, and I'm not singling out Mark in this process because obviously I'll be having to deal with him, and I don't want to sour my relations with him. But I'm just using that as an example.
No.
But any coach, when Ange Postecoglou quit Victory, he'd signed a 3-year deal, hadn't he? And he left after one season.
You know,
if Ange had been sacked by Victory, he'd have been looking for 2 years pay or some sort of compensatory deal. And you know, he didn't pay Victory anything for the problems he caused them in possibly having to find a well-credentialed coach to replace him. They chose to do it internally. So, you know, they're sort of sauce for the goose and sauce for the gander here.
Yeah. Look, I can't imagine, this situation playing out in television land because I tried to leave years ago my then network and they said to me, mate, read the fine print. You're staying here. We've got the options and you can't go anywhere.
And my
potential new employer wasn't prepared to go to court. So it was an interesting time. I had to do what they asked me to do, that's fulfil my contract.
Yeah, well, often they'll make you fulfil your contract or put you on so-called gardening leave.
Oh, yes, we know gardening leave very well.
For your current employer.
Or they warehouse you, my friend. Or they warehouse you. That's the other thing.
Yeah. Suddenly you're right in the obits, George.
tell me something. What did you make of the action, the EPL this week? Last couple delighted. Of days, the results have been all over the place.
I was delighted, personally. I mean, given that Spurs lost to City, I mean, we couldn't have really had a much better set of results. You know, Chelsea dropping points at home, Arsenal getting beat, City beating United. So from my point of view, all is well.
The world is a much better place. Michael Lynch, tell me something. What has been at the moment, we're about to complete what has been a very up and down year in the A-League. What's been your highlight thus far?
Thus far, that was a question without notice.
Yes, that's right.
I suppose seeing Perth Glory, you know, get back to some of the glory days they had in the 90s when they were the power in the land is one. I think the sheer flexibility, adaptability and all-round ability of Richie Delap, who's able to play right back, left back, centre half,
striker,
right midfield, centre forward. He's signed as a right full back and he's the leading scorer. So Delap's season has been something of a highlight for me as well, actually. I mean, and I guess Glory just, you know, sort of keeping on and being amongst the best. Ola Toivonen on his day has been a highlight. The way he sort of can take a game by the scruff of the neck. I actually think he's been better for Victory and more useful than Honda. A lot more, actually, in my view. But that probably sounds like sacrilege to some. But I think he's scored more goals and he's made more crucial interventions for Victory.
I can't argue with anything you've gone there. From the minute he was allowed to run onto the pitch for Victory, because he had three or 4 weeks with injuries, he wasn't quite where he should be. But from the minute he ran on, he made an impact, and he has continued to do that whenever he's played. So I 100% agree.
I mean, there are others, you know. Adam Lafondra, you know, doing ever so well in Sydney. Costa Barbarousis.
It's been a bounce-back year for Costa. I've been very impressed with his efforts this year.
Yeah, he's been terrific, Costa. And there's been obviously some downsides to the kind of mess at Melbourne City over Fornaroli.
So was that the downside for you? Has that been the lowest part of the season?
It is a downside. It probably is, in the sense that here's a guy of great ability, or we think he's got great ability. We don't know. Bruno Fornaroli's barely played football for 2 years. I mean, you know, and he's 31 or whatever he is. I mean, he might have lost a lot of that shine, but let's just give him the benefit of the doubt that he would have come back with some of that ability. And it's just been a shame that an accommodation somehow, with both sides perhaps agreeing to disagree but meet somewhere in the middle, couldn't have been found. But, you know, City had their reasons, and their reasons were justified to themselves, even though fans didn't like it, and I didn't like it, and most football people didn't like it. But so that's probably the low light of the season.
Sure. Well, we thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to cover some topics. Thrilled a bit that you're very pleased with what the boys are doing at White Hart Lane. And by the way, White Hart Lane Mark II continues to shine on about 50 levels and still no goals conceded.
Yeah, unbeaten, no goals conceded. Fantastic. I've forgotten who we've got for the rest of the season at the Lane. We got West Ham.
Yes, we got West Ham.
Yeah, don't like playing the Hammers.
No, big side, awkward side, and they've hurt us in the past.
Yeah, well, they've got that sort of...
And Louise is nodding her head saying, yeah, they could give you trouble.
Well, they often do in the London... Like, I always think it's really hard for London teams to actually win the league because... You know, there's that many London sides in the Premiership, so they play a lot more derbies, which have always got a lot more heat in them. If you're in Merseyside, you're basically playing Everton twice, and then who's your other big grudge game? Man United, probably.
Just don't mention Everton to any Manchester United fans at the moment, all right?
Oh, go on, you there's... toffee. Good to see, wasn't it? Great to see.
Oh, sensational to see. The toffees stand up and... absolutely whack the Red Devils.
Yeah.
I didn't see that result coming in any way, shape or form. I thought, you know, 1-0 they could beat them, or a draw.
No, they've done it before. Didn't they beat them 3-0 a couple of seasons ago?
Yeah, but that was a couple of seasons ago, and there were so many reasons why they did. But no, it's been quite remarkable, quite remarkable.
Well, you know, I mean, there's a lot of questions about Man United. Pogba, what a waste of money. Good player, but 99 million or whatever. Sorry.
Louise is in tears.
I'm not in tears.
Well, he's in tears. For a bloke who's the world's most expensive player,
he'll be on his way out.
You expect stratospheric performances.
Did you hear what Louise said? She said he's on the way out.
Well, where's he going? Real Madrid or Juve?
I think he'll go to Real Madrid, link up with...
Well, they kind of got a Galactico policy sort of still going. He'd probably end up there. He played his best football at Juventus, obviously.
He did. He absolutely looked...
But he was good for France in the World Cup. But,
yeah, he was.
You know, when you're the world's most expensive player, you're expected to deliver Ronaldo and Messi-style results, and he has been a far, far cry from that.
Oh, and has the whole team. United are just...
A rabble at the moment.
Can I ask you a different question, Michael? United don't care.
Can I ask you a different question? Mr. Edwards, Ed Edward, is it? Who's the head honcho at Manchester United?
Isn't it Kenyon? Not Kenyon.
Ed
Woodward.
Ed Woodward. I just love it when you say that. I just like watching you get tortured when you look at me going, Ed Woodward. Yeah.
I'll turn your mic off, George.
Do you think that their decision to make Ole Gunnar Solskjaer their full-time coach at this time of the season was a productive move, or should they have just waited to the end of the season?
Well, it wasn't done at this time of the season. It was done about 2 months ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying, shouldn't they have just waited?
I could understand the pressures and why they would have done it, but a proper hard-headed football set up would have waited. He'd had a brilliant run. He'd had six or seven games on the spin, hadn't he, where they
won and
got through against PSG and all that. But they hadn't actually seen how he would react in adversity. When things started to go wrong, when they started losing games, could he tactically change things? And, you know, that's a trope that we're now hearing an awful lot more of. And it's probably true. You know, they probably married in haste and will repent at leisure. I mean, you know, he's not going to be the worst manager they could have ever hired, and he'll probably be much better given a summer to clear out some players and bring in those he does want to work with. But it is an enormous job, Manchester United, you know, because of the social, cultural place they occupy in English and world football, and the financial pressures about continuing to generate huge revenues to pay down the Glazer debt that was used on a leveraged buyout to acquire the club. So, and there is a school of thought that says that they're actually just more interested in selling shirts and you know, being the most popular team in Malaysia.
But you know what? In order to sell those shirts, you've got to be successful. At the moment, they're struggling.
And you know, eventually, although it didn't hurt Liverpool, they won the Champions League, obviously, but they haven't won a Premier League for 30-whatever years. They haven't won the Premier League. The last time Liverpool were English champions was in the days of the First Division.
Speaking of commercially,
they're still a beast, aren't they?
Speaking of commercial interests, I noticed that after 22 seasons, sponsors QBE have called it quits just when Perth was basking in glory.
What's that? Sorry, I missed that last bit.
QBE has called it quits.
With whom?
With Perth.
Oh, have they?
Yes.
Oh, well, talk about backing a loser. I mean, perfect timing, eh? I mean, now's the time they should be doubling down, isn't it?
You would have thought so. You would have thought so. Yeah. I'm glad you've doubled down. As usual, we've been joined by the Aegis, Michael Lynch, who hasn't held back in any way, shape or form, and I trust he never does. It makes him the unique talent he is. Thank you, Michael. We're looking forward to reading your material tomorrow on The Age. Or if you get online now, we can pick up the latest.
I'm sure.
Good on you, my boy. Have a great weekend.
Bye.
See you at the football. Bye.